You're listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental.
How are you feeling after that, Matt?
I feel a lot better than Bob.
Extra Time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Get lost.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here!
From New York, you are listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental. From my apartment in Bed-Stuy, Brooklyn, I am Andrew Wiebe with my partners in soccer, David Goss, Charlie Davies. It is 5:17 p.m. Eastern on November 12th, and for the first time in 280 days, the U.S. national team has played a game. And in exactly what we deserved, the result was 0-0. We can't have
no
it.
No one cares.
Don't
no
get
one
greedy.
Sees it.
Don't get greedy. We wanted
goals. Keep your
goals.
Third eye open. That's
we
a victory.
We wanted some final third, you know, patterns of play that resulted in clear goal-scoring opportunities. Not going to get those. It's okay, though.
It's a big away result in World Cup qualifying in Wales. Everyone knows you don't go to Swansea on a cold night and expect to get a result.
Yeah, man.
This is what you do.
The grass there is very tall. Extremely, unless they bring the sheep through, and then it's a little bit closer shorn. But we have a great show. Stu Holden will show up here in a little bit. We don't know when, but he's going to call in post-FS1 responsibilities. Peter Vermees, I chatted with him this afternoon. He responds to his Extra Time hate squad.
Oh, Lord.
You know, we couldn't get you on for that one, but I had to ask him about it. So you'll see what he says about that, about Gianluca Busio, about living through COVID and managing a team at the same time. Some really interesting things about what they've had to do during this pandemic, the little moments of anxiety, the moments of, I don't know, mental weight that come with being the manager of a club right now. And of course, we have your mail as well. Let's just jump right into it.
Let's do it.
This is what the show is about.
Let's go.
Charlie, you've played games for the U.S. national team, so I think it's only fair that we get you out onto the field first here. Yeah. First impressions, first thoughts. As I said, 285 days. The average age of that starting 11 was a little bit more than 22. Mm-hmm. Two 17-year-olds, three debuts, a false nine with Sebastian Legette. The formation was a little bit of, you know, it was up in the air, and then it was up in the air again, and then it was changed again, and the U.S. national team Twitter was confusing all of us, and then we watched 90 minutes. And you took what away?
All right. Let's start with the positives. Can we all agree that Sergiño Dest is the truth?
Baller.
Certified baller. I love all the flair. It really gives you Danny Alves vibes, right? Like right back, doing some, having some tricks, some flair, some step overs. I'm all about it, right? As long as you pull it off. You can pull it off, go ahead and do it. But as soon as you try one of those tricks and it's a World Cup qualifier in Azteca Stadium, and you find yourself down a goal, 1-0 because of that.
Wow.
Because you did that in the wrong spot.
Charlie, you're already trying to just beat him down right now? You're
like, yes,
Sergiño, try it. Anytime you're feeling it, baby. Yeah. And then you're like, but if it happens in this and we lose, I'm coming for you.
Hey, we're talking about keeping it real, right?
Okay.
So we're going to keep it 100. And so I love the fact that he's playing his game. And you can see he's natural on the right side. I don't want to hear the talk about moving him to the left side to accommodate bringing in someone else. Right back, that's a spot. Keep him there. That's that naturally, that's what comes to him. Good. Keep him there. Zach Steffen, okay? You hear all the talk. He's not playing games. He's not fit. You know, he's not going to be in a rhythm. He had one big-time save to make. He made it. So I want to hear all the chatter that's out there. He's not playing games. He's not good enough. Don't consider him. No, he's the number one, clearly.
This feels that's like a little bit of Monday, Thursday, Extra Time rivalry, if I'm being honest. If I'm like reading the tea leaves, anybody out there who may or may not be saying something about somebody named Matt Turner and Zach Steffen, Kayate.
I'm the one who said Zach Steffen is the clear number one. Done. So on top of that, hey, you guys moved me off the Monday show, so that's... Hey,
I didn't do that. Topic. That's not my choice.
That's somebody else. Hey, I'm feeling the Thursday anyway. Fine. Okay. I'm going to keep rolling because I'm feeling good.
Go.
Now I'm going to go right here. We're going to lock it down. Center back, John Brooks. My man's ready. He is ready to take the next step and be that guy. If he's not the captain, he's a leader in the back. Okay. He's the guy who's going to set the tone.
We've already got a captain, Charlie. Right. He plays right in front of John Brooks.
Yeah.
He's the best player.
I'm going, I'm give me some time. Okay. Now we're going to move up to the midfield area, which I think also tells you a lot because I'm going right to the midfield, so that should signal something. Okay, Tyler Adams, my man is ready. Also, certified six, the starter at six. Boom.
Stamp it.
No questions asked. He's ready for the challenge. He's shown his maturity, his growth, his ability to cover the field. You can play with 1-6 because of him, because he has that pace. He reads the game well. He can play in tight spaces. And I love his also setting the tone, the ability to play hard, rough. He has the edge. And then we're going to go right to, all right, Weston McKennie right alongside him. Oh, I loved his growth. And you can tell he's even a step ahead of, like, let's say, a Conrad De La Fuente. He gets the ball, that chop pass directly on the pitch into the 18 is before Conrad even recognizes it, right? It's and that is from playing with Dybala, Cristiano Ronaldo, where you have to be like this. And if you're not like that, if you're not 3-4 steps ahead, you're on the bench. You're not playing because you're playing. You're competing against Aaron Ramsey. You're competing against some of these top young player midfielders in the world. If you're not on that level of Cristiano Ronaldo and Dybala to play into their runs because they make those runs early, you're off the pitch. So I loved what I saw from Weston McKennie. Scratching the surface.
I know. Weston McKennie, to me, feels like, I don't know. I don't know why I'm thinking of him in this way, but he feels like the kid that when you were a kid, the guy that was on the front of the bike and everybody just follows them around or like, I want to follow that dude. Like, he's the one. He's cool. When time comes to handle business, he's handling his business. Like the whole time I was just like, I will follow you, Weston McKennie. Mm-hmm. I will follow you. And he tracked back to make that tackle. And it was like out of nowhere, he comes sliding and he just gets up like it's nothing. Like if you're on that team, everybody just puffs up just a little bit. And it's just like, yeah, that's what's up. That's what we do. And even better than that, there were some questions. And I don't know if like Doyle, or I don't know if it was Bobby or whatever little bubble I'm in, it's like, oh, Weston McKennie on the ball is not that good. But every time I watch him for Juve, and in this game, his ability to see the moment to turn, his ability to have that little burst away from pressure, his ability to play that little clip ball over, and he was opening up desks the entirety of the first half. Like his anticipation of moments, and even though it sometimes doesn't come off, it feels like it's one step ahead. He just feels like a natural leader out there and a natural sort of like swagger and trend and vibe setter. And he is by far for me, like I'm ready to go get a Weston McKennie jersey right this second. Not the ugly Juve ones, but the sick US ones that they were wearing.
This kid is so
that's where I'm drawing the line right there, right? Done. Drawing the line. Now there's this middle area, right? I liked the ideas I saw from Yunus Musa, right? This is a young kid. This is a teenager still, just getting into the Valencia side. So he still has a lot of growth ahead of him. But encouraging. His body of work is very small, right? But you could see what he can be. Covering a lot of ground, being a little bit of a feisty midfielder who can take risks, right? He has the ability to take turns. I love around the box, they play to his feet, and he could open his hips quickly and turn in short distances where you have to be really quick and thinking about that next defender who's coming. So when he can position himself to play forward right away off a half turn, phenomenal. Those are things you can't teach, the awareness. So he's one player that I'm really looking forward to seeing as he matures.
So I just wanted to add, he's played on the wing for Valencia so far this season to see how comfortable he looked centrally, wanting to come get the ball off the center backs. And as you said, his ability to turn in midfield, which Frankie de Jong has done probably at the best level over the last few years. And that's something that you saw a lot of from Weston McKennie as well. Musa looking comfortable in that role shows you the soccer IQ level, that he could play out wide and be successful at a La Liga level, beat Real Madrid, then a week later come and play a new position with a brand new team and look just as confident, as comfortable, is huge. And he looked like he fit with the other two. Because you mentioned Tyler, right? Tyler can play defensive mid by himself. You don't need help. But Weston McKennie gives him that help. Mm-hmm. And Musa looked to fit in perfectly where the three of them can do everything.
Right.
And so you can just continue to rotate and move and take chances and take risks and someone else can follow up. Continue, Charlie.
Now, thank you. Yunus Musa's body positioning and the way he like positions himself to hold off and ride that next challenge, and then the physical and the cleanness of the touch to say, okay, you're on my back, you're pressuring me. Okay, I've just moved myself in a position to make the right pass, or I've moved myself in a position to not be under pressure anymore. Watching this midfield, I mean, we didn't get any goals. So we didn't have that moment. We didn't have that final third.
We didn't have a striker.
Yeah. We didn't have that. But watching this midfield with the youth and the relative experience to that youth, I mean, that's what we've been waiting for all this time, even past 285 days, because these guys have never really been together for long periods. They're just saying, my God, what could this be? All of them have these specialized skill sets. And I feel like Tyler Adams just has, he has like a second sense. He knows where that ball is about to come. Like his ability to just be in the right place to recover, or his ability to say, okay, that's the trajectory of the ball. I'm going to hip check you right here, mm-hmm. turn, keep it clean and play. Mm-hmm. We've been waiting for it for so long, and it felt really good to see it.
And the next player is Gio Reyna. There were times
middle ground, like, huh? Not in the middle. Okay.
In the middle. Yeah.
Walk me through.
I think there were times where, you know, he was trying to do a little too much and put it on his shoulders to kind of stand out. And, you know, at Dortmund, he plays a lot quicker. He gets it off his feet in a shorter amount of time. So you're not seeing him dwell on the ball as much. I do think that he was still trying to figure it out. Where is he in the ecosystem of this national team? Because this is a unproven, young, full international side, right? And so for him coming in, his first cap, you want this to be such a meaningful introduction that first time on the pitch for the U.S. men's national team, you want to score, you want to create the goals, and you also want to stand out. So I think he's still trying to figure out, okay, where am I? And then two, you know, how much time can I take on the ball? Am I the playmaker? Am I the guy who has to play quick, or am I the guy that kind of just floats around, gets it off my feet quick, has good runs and movement, good on the transition, both defensively and attacking? So I still think he obviously is maturing on the international level, playing in against national teams, because club, he's made that adjustment and he's still growing at Dortmund. It's not like he's a finished product. He's still maturing there as well, but there's always that initial little step once you play on the international stage.
What do you attribute, Dave? We were talking about this before. What do you attribute that sort of like pause? Because we saw it on this night a bunch of different times where he's just sort of like posted up, leg dangling, waiting for something. I don't know if it's his decision, yeah. Whether it's a run. It just seems sort of static.
Charlie knows this better than we do, but Giovanni Reyna has always been the guy on every team he's ever played on, because he's been the best player on the field every time he stepped on a field until he got to Dortmund a little less than a year ago. So his role has always been to make everything happen from start to finish. And now playing with professionals, he's learning. And we see it with Dortmund as well. And we talked about it with Greg Berhalter on this show. That final decision, and I don't think it's selfish that he doesn't give up the ball. I think he's not used to the guy making the right run, trusting his teammate to be there already and laying the ball off. And then he over dribbles after he's not made the decision. But I think it's going to come with time, and I'm not worried about it. And Charlie mentioned at Dortmund, it just happens so much quicker because Marco Reus is coming in and Haaland is making that run perfectly off the shoulder into the right side of the box, and he's laying that ball there. So it's kind of more muscle memory. And here, where he had to figure it out with a group that he hasn't played with before, that doesn't have a lot of set patterns of how they're going to play and finish in the attack, he had to figure it out on the fly. And I think he was a little slow in his decision making, and that comes out by him over dribbling. But I did like his ability, and he does it with Dortmund as well, to pick spots on the field. Stu brought it up in a different way. We'll ask him about it, but he's not going to stay wide. And you don't want him to, because Sergiño Dest is out there, or Anthony Robinson is out there. You want him to float in and find spots. Imagine if Christian Pulisic was the guy on the left side in this game, not Conrad, who has not played a professional soccer game. And you see when he's on the ball, he has something. That's why he plays at Barcelona, but he's not there yet. Imagine if you had Pulisic to pull a defender away. Now Reyna has the space to operate, and I think you would have seen closer to the best of him. But for a first showing, I thought he showed that he can play and be the guy that he is for Dortmund at the international level.
And imagine if there was a true center forward in this game. I mean, Sebastian Lletget did his best as a quote-unquote false nine, but I don't think he would say, I don't think Greg Berhalter would say, I don't think any of us would say that is, at any time, the ideal way to play Sebastian Lletget. What did you make of the sort of starting formation, Charlie, and that lack of a center forward? I mean, I would have even just liked to have seen, and I know you don't just want to throw like a Sebastian Soto in, you know, and get him dripping wet off the jump. I mean, I know you want to kind of ease them into those things. Play your kids, everybody. Make sure you play your kids. I heard some youngins behind there for Charlie. Walrus is getting a nice... Okay, buddy.
Cam's like, I would have taken a goal.
Can you shut the door for me? Anyway, but, Charlie, what'd you think of the number nine situation and like the false nine situation?
Yeah, I mean, would I have liked to see a real striker, a number nine? Yes. But I'm okay with the way that Greg Berhalter kind of organized this front line, because the idea is, yes, Legette is at the top of the spear, but there's interchanging. All mm-hmm. three can come across, and you have basically three attacking midfielders, wingers, who can kind of interchange, make runs in behind, combined, bring in Weston McKennie, bring in Yunus Musa into the box, combined, and break down Wales that way, which they should have. I mean, yeah. they should have won this game. But, you know, for me, you know, Conrad De La Fuente is a player I haven't seen too much of. And, you know, he's at Barcelona, so the expectations are super high. As soon as you hear Barcelona, you're like, oh, this guy has to be the real deal. And yes, he has qualities to make him the real deal, but there's still a ways to go. I think that was evident in this match. And that comes with first team reps, because at the end of the day, you can be as talented or you have the most potential there is, but until you're playing first team minutes every week and you're in that rhythm and you have to compete every single day for minutes on the pitch, you're not going to be ready for the national team. That's just how it goes. Keepers are different. I think keepers are the one position that you don't have to play every week to still get a spot, because it's a rhythm. It's that reps that you get in training as a goalie. I mean, as long as he's getting 11v11 matches in training with the reserves, Zach Steffen's going to be okay. But as a player, when you're in the game and you're tasked with, you know, having to break up plays and get on the ball, and you need that rhythm, the consistency that you get in a match, the match fitness, you're really going to take a hit. So I think Conrad didn't do himself any justice going out there and playing as much as he did to make an impact for you know, considerable minutes when you're talking about a full strength squad. And then Miazga and Anthony Robinson really didn't do well when it comes down to it. They aren't ready is what it comes down to. Not that Anthony Robinson is not the answer now. He could be, but with this opportunity, he didn't grab it with both hands. And same with Matt Miazga.
Weeby, you're muted.
Yeah.
What was missing for you? Yeah, this is what happens when you have kids charging into your quote-unquote office space.
One play for me in particular, just at Matt Miazga, was a play where in the second half where he tried to cut out a ball front. He got beat. And then the player was able to cut in front of him from the left to right, and then he fouls him.
But he got to the ball first. He didn't want to put it out. He tried to maintain possession, and then I think it was Lawrence got around him.
Him, because you're a New York.
No, no, I'm saying he has to have that awareness
I'm just
put that ball out. Otherwise, by the way, I'm pretty sure he fouled someone on every other duel he had.
Yeah,
so like he had a really tough game in general. I completely agree with you. But that specific play stood out to me as well of he had the idea. Okay, it didn't work perfectly. Just put the ball out, let everyone recover, get numbers behind the ball and move on. And he wanted to make like a great play. And it totally blew up in his face.
And that, for me, that shows when you leave Major League Soccer and you're playing minutes and you're, you know, for Mark McKenzie at the moment right now is the best young American center back that we have. You know, for him to make that next move, you look at Matt Miazga and you see his move to Chelsea. Oh, wow. And it's great. And it stands up. But in the end, if you're not playing considerable minutes at that level and you see what happens, how you take kind of like a backward step and then it's hard to recover your form, that happened to Matt Miazga. So for Mark McKenzie, it's, I need to make this next step the right step. Don't take the massive jump at the biggest club that comes for you. Make sure you know the manager, you know the sporting director, you know the plan for you and how it all fits with your overall dream and your trajectory. So
it's like when Stu Holden went to Bolton and just wasn't good enough to play there, right?
Yeah. I mean, Stu had quite the transition, but I think for Stu, it was more,
Stu wasn't good enough. It was too high a level.
His banter
and that's
wasn't
the,
good
that's
enough.
The model. And you can't have US players follow that. His
banter. I don't think you can doubt the man's banter. And of course he's here with us now. Let's bring him in live. Stu Holden.
What?
Wait, I'm
caught off guard. Wait,
you guys know what time I'm on with that David Goska guy?
Am I on with Charlie Davies? Are you sure?
You and Charlie have to do a full day's worth of show.
See, now we were supposed to be here because we're both basically in a closet. Your closet is much better decorated and your depth of field is good.
Jersey. I was just dusting off Giggs's jersey that he gave me.
I don't know if that's the one you want to pull out. Why wasn't he coaching this match?
Name drops with Holden. this is where it really is. There it is.
Wow, that's a show. You just give each other jerseys.
Yeah, so this...
Go ahead, Weeby.
This is a podcast, so I was just going to throw out to people that Stu is throwing up the Giggs jersey. He's got the show jersey. Now he's got
gonna go
Charlie's going to go into his very well-appointed closet here. What's up, Stu?
What's up, guys? Thanks for having me on. I sprinted home after the broadcast here. I will have you know, you guys are my my daily, weekly listening in the car. So thanks for keeping me up. There you go. Roomies for life. Charlie's pulling up the jersey.
But Charlie had that easily accessible, I want to say. That was like at the ready. You guys are both prepared for this. Give me your first takeaway, Stu, from this that you've just kind of been mulling over as you had your drive home. Kind of your gut feeling after this game that we've waited for 285 days.
I would say I went into the game full of hope, full of optimism, excitement, giddy, you know, give it to me. U.S. national team is back. I would say after 30 minutes, I was like, oh, yeah, here we go. You know, this is excitement. This is good. And then second half starts and I'm like, can somebody put the ball in the back of net? Can we create something in the final third? The game started to slow. Guys got tired. You know, I thought Greg Berhalter waited a little long to make some subs. But at the end of the day, like, I'm still trying to contextualize all of this and think like of where we've been for the past couple of years and where we're headed. And also remembering that we don't have we don't have our best player, and we still don't have, you know, I still think Jordan Morris can start for that team. I still think Mark McKenzie can play for that team. I still think Jozy Altidore can play for that team. So, you know, considering that these guys had 2 days of training, Greg Berhalter didn't have much time with them. There was a lot of pressure as far as the excitement goes. I came away still pretty excited about this team. So
who gives you like the butterflies on this team right now?
Like, do you see this? Like, where do I have this? Like, a needle here with Musa. Like, give me some more Musa. Like, jab me with like full of Musa, and like I'm ready to go. I love what he brings. I think he's a really unique skill set. I think he's kind of a blend of, you know, Tyler and Weston, and then still has a little bit of flair. Like, he could play wide, but I think he could really a real force in the middle of the field. So I didn't know about a ton about him. I'd watched a bit of him over the past couple of months, and I think if we can secure his certificate, like, I'm willing to go in.
So why didn't you sign him to Mallorca? That's the question.
No joke, Charlie. Like, I was talking to name drop here, Steve on the way home, Steve Nash. And I said, how did we not know about this kid from Valencia? Like, we would have brought him to Mallorca and given him some game time. But I think it's too late for that one.
You guys have played for this national team. That gives you an advantage in this discussion. How do you convince a kid like this to make this decision? Because he has options. This is not like he's really in a spot where he's got to go to the U.S. Like, England is out here. Gareth Southgate is saying, we love his game. We think he fits with us. We just don't want to rush him. What do you do if you're Greg?
Yeah, it's easiest time. Maybe, hold on. Can I hijack the hosting role for 1 second?
Do it.
Because I'm curious from your guys' perspective before I weigh in, because we talked to Weston McKennie and Greg Berhalter about this exact issue yesterday, about do the United States need to be recruiting these players? And I will leave you before I'm interested what you guys say. Weston McKennie's almost gave it the like, well, they, you know, A, they have to be good enough. And then B, like, they need to, like, they have to want to be here. And like, C, I don't feel like we should have to recruit. Like, we are the U.S. And if you want to play for us, like, come play for us.
Well, I'll jump quick and say they had to recruit Serginho Dest. And I don't hear anybody talking about complaining about that. So I think it comes down to identifying who can play for the national team. One, their potential. Are they playing right now like Serginho Dest was at Ajax? And then it's, okay, this is what we can present you. If there's ever a time where you can actually make the transition from playing wherever you are in your club to national team and get an opportunity, a real opportunity, and not have to wait for 4 years or wait for a whole cycle, it's now. And you look at who are the other players that are in the process with you? Who's the generation now currently playing? And it's all exciting young players. Why wouldn't you want to be a part of this project? And then you throw in, oh, there's a World Cup in 2026 here on American soil.
talk about the marketing, that aspect of really, you know, promoting yourself and doing it with all these players that you're going to now have played 5 or 6 years with. That's too big of a project, too big of a dream to turn down. And anybody that is not hyped, anybody that's not hyped about that, see you later. We don't want you. But if you're telling me that's not what they told Serginho Dest and said, hey, I know you're looking at Holland. I know you're looking at the United States. This is what we're about. You've been with our youth national team setup, so you kind of know what we're doing, how we value you. But look at ahead. You have Christian Pulisic. You have Weston McKennie, you have Tyler Adams, you have Zach Steffen, you have all these guys who are playing on big clubs. So that's not an issue. We have players who are playing at massive clubs. But you get to go along this process with them. You're all along the same age. Now you're going to be with this national team for 10, 12 years. You can actually play in 3 World Cups with this group. How is this, you know, not something that's appealing to you? And then you leave it with them.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think
the sell is the easy part.
To have dual nationals come play for the U.S. still is a massive part of the job of the national team. It's something that I think we know Ernie Stewart was a big part of with Serginho Dest and is going to continue to be, as is McBride. And I agree with Charlie. There's a pitch that you give, and then you don't hammer them on it. If they don't want to be a part of that, if they take the pitch and say, I'm not super interested, I don't think you continue to come back with the talent pool that the U.S. currently has. I think Musa would be amazing if you brought him into the national team, but Wiebe brought up Balogun at Arsenal. This is already a national team that has a full group. You don't need to go and bend over backwards to get him to come play. If he came, it would be amazing. But there's enough players in this group now to not have to, let's say, go to a Timothy Chandler and say, you can have anything you want if you're willing to be a part of this national team, which didn't go very well for the U.S. at that time.
To me, it's about vibes, too. And maybe it's because I've spent too much time around you guys and Sasha. I always think of like the stories that you guys tell about the Olympics and China and the 23s and the vibes that you still have. This young group has those similar kind of vibes where it feels to me like they're all sort of learning about each other and coming together as a group and dreaming together. And if you can introduce Musa to that and he is part of that and he says, actually, I identify with these guys. I like these guys. They like me. We all fit together. Our games fit together. We can do something together. And he wants to be a part of that, then by all means, come on in. Right. But if it doesn't mesh, if it doesn't quite work, if it's just like, this feels forced, then you have to move on. And that's on Greg and that's on those established players to sort of figure out in the moments. I was looking for little body language cues throughout this game from him. And when he came off, him and Giovanni
Reyna. Yeah, he waited sort of for like, Reyna.
Yeah, I liked that. That was a moment to me that said, this guy wants to be here. And that's the key. We have a Peter Vermees interview coming up after this. And I asked Peter about what it means to play for the U.S. and what we should be thinking about with this group. And he basically said, all the money, all the prestige, all the stuff that goes with club, throw it out with the club and with the countryside. You have to want it to be a part of that project because it is the country and is the people that you identify with. And he's like, that's what they'll look for. And I think Musa has an opportunity to either be a part of that or he has other opportunities. And it's a beautiful thing for him. And now we sit around and wait and we dream.
Yeah,
and it's fun.
We've been on a first date with Musa now. And I would say that I feel like it went pretty well. You know, we
had a first impression, huh?
Yeah, we served him up a nice dinner. We didn't, you know, we didn't necessarily have the dessert we wanted. And, you know, he might still come back and think, oh, you know, I can find somebody that can give me the filet mignon that with all the dessert and everything that I need. But I will say to all of your guys' point, I do agree. And I said this to Charlie when him and I had talked offline. I think you do have to have guys that really want to be there and that want to, you know, fight for the crest. It's an honor to represent the United States. It is. But in saying that, yes, we have an exciting pool. Yes, we have the most talented generation we've had in a long time. But the other part of this is we can't get too lost in the hype and forget where we've been. And, the arrogance that we've had in the past, and we were incredibly humbled when we didn't qualify for the World Cup in Cuba. I think the difference between a Musa and a Sebastian Legette is winning you a game potentially against Germany versus tying a game or something like that. And I think, players like that, we can't be arrogant enough to say, like, you either come and play for us or you don't. Like, but I think you need to kind of,
I'm not saying we're playing hard to get here. I'm not saying we're not texting for 3 days. Like, we're texting him, you know. We're like, hey, what's up? I had a great time. Like, I got more plans for you. Let's
wait 24 hours. Everyone wait 24 hours. Don't do too much.
We're taking players that can possibly play for the Netherlands, can play for England. Like, these are young players who are actually being courted by these countries as well. So it is a massive accomplishment when you can pull up some of the youngest, you know, world talents and bring them to the national team. So there is a little bit of, you have to give a little bit of sales pitch.
Oh yeah.
But you leave it and you say, this is what it is. You either want to be a part of it and you don't, or you don't.
I think, Charlie, that Serginho Dest knew that Frank De Boer was going to come in and just ruin.
Why you got to do that to Frank, man?
Yeah, you know what? That Netherlands, Fox Sports Netherlands, Frank. Late night. He was like, this is not good. This is not good.
Frank, L.A. You can find him in Marina Del Rey.
All right, Stu, I wanted to ask real quick, because you mentioned a few times your conversations with Greg Berhalter yesterday. From when you've talked to him in the past, finally getting a camp, finally being with the players, finally having a game, what did he sound like? What was the conversation like compared to the other ones you've had?
Yeah, he was, you know, Greg was incredibly candid with us about a number of things. And look, we'd all talked, I think, about ahead of him getting the head coaching job for the national team, about him being an on-the-field guy and wanting to train every day. And how is that going to work with the national team? I think he'd struggled over the period of, what is it, 8-9 months or something since the U.S. last played. And then even struggling with the fact that he was just saying it's hard to get guys into camp, 2 days of training. How do you get them up to speed? How do you, you know, he was saying that before they'd sent guys videos, but he just said they're playing so many games. They're playing Wednesday, Saturday. I can't be sending these guys video clips and think that they're going to remotely care about breaking line for a national team against Wales. He's like, I just want to keep this group growing. I want to see guys emerge as leaders. He referenced to us, actually, because we'd said, who are the leaders in this team now? You know, we know Tyler, we know Weston. And he said it's still a group that's trying to find its voice, which I found kind of interesting. He said, Charlie, you know, these day before the game set pieces, and it's attackers versus defenders or starters versus non-starters. And he said the starters had conceded a number of goals. And he said, like, nobody really said anything. And nobody, you know, normally you have the guy that's like, hey, guys, sharpen up. We got a game tomorrow. And he wants this group to find its own voice, which I respect. And he said that Tim Ream pulled him after and said that was pretty quiet. Like, I was surprised nobody said anything. And Greg's like, I want to see what it looks like in the game. And then I want to see what it looks like against Panama. And so I think he's still got a little time of kind of plugging all these different pieces. But by the way, did you guys see Greg on the sideline today? He's hugging Tyler.
Yeah.
You know, he's double bapping Tim Weah as he's coming on the field. Like, you know, he's sitting right now thinking, yes, there's a little bit more pressure on me because this team is doing well as far as the player pool. But also, like, I got some ballers finally. And I think he's excited about that.
What about up top? What about up top? What do we do up there? Because this wasn't it. This was not it.
I don't think it's a jump off the cliff moment.
I'm not jumping. Like a lot of-
But I'm just saying, looking over
the cliff and I'm like, hey, if I was the jump, that's not.
But your pool is Josh Sargent, Giassi Zardes, Josie Altidor, some of the young guys in MLS. None of them were available for this game. So his decision to start Legette there, not yet.
Ayo Akinola as well.
Ayo Akinola. Yeah, you could be upset with whatever, but none of the players that we think should be starting a big game in this position were available. So it's not something that I worry about.
So Greg, and they actually mistweeted the lineup, I think, U.S. Soccer, and they had Gioacchini starting. Greg had told us that was the decision he was waiting to see. He had originally started him up front and had Musa in the midfield, and then he switched it for Legette to that position. And, you know, I think I completely agree with you in that, you know, the top three to me right now are Josie, Josh, and Giassi. And then, you know, you had a guy, Gioacchini, who plays second division in France. You have Sebastian Soto, who, yes, is signed to Norwich, but is playing second division Holland. Like, you know, none of these guys, and then Tim Weah, who could also play as striker, has been a little bit for Lille. None of these guys are screaming out, like, I deserve a shot to start at the nine. So I'm disappointed that the U.S., that was the area of the field. Again, I felt we needed more. Legette is not a false nine. Like, it just didn't work. And I felt it was a missed opportunity in a game where you're seeing so many new faces to play with a striker and you know, allow Sebastian Legette to start as, you know, inside and play Gio wide right, something like that.
What'd you think of Gio? We had a long discussion about his debut and what it means and maybe the little things on the field that could be a little sharper from him.
Yeah, I thought Gio had a mixed day. I still think he struggled and I think I said this a few times on the broadcast, like playing wide right in this system versus Dortmund's is very different. And he kept wanting to come in and get the ball. He wants the ball at all times. And, you know, when Serginho is flying up the right-hand side, it allowed him to come inside. But then you have a number nine in Legette who kept dropping into the same pocket. So then you essentially have four guys in the same along the same lines. And, you know, Greg Berhalter had said to us he'd asked Gio to run in behind more. I don't think I saw him running behind once tonight. So, you know, whether that was the way that the team had kind of lined up or the way that the U.S. had possession, he's going to be fine. He's, you know, Gio Reyna is such a talented player. I think it's finding the right position for him in this system. And when you have Christian and you have Josh or Josie, he's going to have more, you know, more of a say in the game, I think.
What do you expect against Panama?
I'd like to see a couple more debuts. You had six tonight. I'd like to see Chris Richards get a start at right back, center back alongside. I'm curious to see if he rests Brooks. There's probably, you know, John Brooks hasn't had the best luck when it comes to double friendlies for the United States and his injuries. And
yeah, now you're going to break that hex.
Yeah, please. Because he was a beast tonight, by the way. He was total beast. He's like showed again every time, you know, that I see him at his best. He's the starter, no doubt. Who else would I like to see? Otasui, I think I'd like to see in the middle. If he's going to keep growing, I'm scared to see how tall he's going to be because he is a giant. He is a real presence. And I thought Johnny Cardoso looked really good in the deep lying six. And I actually would guess that Tyler Adams wouldn't start this game because, you know, he's had some injuries this year at Leipzig too. So I think you're going to see quite the reshuffle. I could see almost a whole new midfield in there as well. And I'm all here for that. We play Panama enough, guys. We see them in CONCACAF. Like,
yeah.
We're playing a friendly in Switzerland. Like, let the kids play. Come on.
Run them out there. All right, that's the U.S. national team. TBD on whether we'll break it down on Monday. We may talk to Greg Berhalter next Thursday, so stay tuned to that one. Let's go out of here. Let's go playoffs with you, Stu, before we let you go. And make dinner. Do whatever you're doing back there. I don't know if you have kids playing behind you, but hey, I've had one burst in.
And here in L.A.
you know, whatever. You West Coast.
Stu has sun for five more hours. Exactly. We've been in darkness for 3 days. Exactly. Yeah.
Let's talk about the West then, since you're out West. What do you make of the Western Conference? Like, LAFC, seventh seed? Sporting Kansas City, one seed. These two doubt him, but like it feels like anybody could win this.
Oh, don't throw us under the bus.
You gotta own it now. Yeah,
yeah, but this
for three weeks.
Look at him. 100%.
Like I'm in the cauldron.
Is he doubting Vietnamese?
Both of them.
Oh wow! I will say it has been with Sporting Kansas City. One of those years, like every time I check the standings, I'm like, wait, they're still in first.
Exactly.
I felt like they lost three games to the Dynamo or something, you know, just like perception. And they almost quietly, in a way, I guess, because we've been talking about the Seattle's and LAFC's kind of, you know, meandering through this season and the Portland Timbers overachieving with all the injuries. I don't know. The West is so like that first round tie with Seattle, LAFC. I know it's scheduling and I know it's COVID. It's such a bummer that both teams are going to be missing, you know, some key players there. But that is like a blockbuster game for the ages and the first round of the playoffs, man. And Seattle, like, I fancy them in that game. I think LAFC have just not been consistent enough this year. And as much as I want to think like, okay, just get them in the playoffs and they're going to be fine, they still do something. Like I did their game the other day against Portland and they looked in control for 85 minutes and then Valeri breaks away and Villafania nods one in at the back post and LAFC are in disarray. Like, I just don't think LAFC can do it without Rodriguez and Rossi. And I just don't. And as far as the rest of the West, I mean, gosh, I had a contenders and pretenders thing. Like I said, the Portland Timbers were pretenders. And I said that because I don't think they can win without Blanco and Niezgoda. Like I know that they were deep enough to get through a regular season and perform the way that they did. MLS is back. They were lights out. They deserve that. They're a really good team. They're well coached. I just don't think they can go all the way with that roster.
Is this the same old then? Are you going to end this with the Sounders?
I know. It's boring.
I did it too.
It's yeah, me too. And, you know, we have MLS Cup on Fox this year, December 12th. And I fully expect the Seattle Sounders to be there.
I had them too. So that makes four
of us. Where are they playing? Where are they playing, though, in the final?
Oh, so that depends who you're picking to come out of the East, then.
No, who you're picking to come out of the East. Yeah. You're so the guest you? Right now.
Yeah, Orlando. Who are you?
Orlando.
I have this ongoing joke with Orlando fans because I think they've been excellent this year, and I'm so happy with what or Oscar Pereja's done. But I think it's 1 year too soon for them. I think they're missing another key player that takes them over the edge. I'm going with Charlie's former boys. I'm going with the Philadelphia Union. I'm going Philly, Seattle.
Don't call me Nostradamus. Don't.
Let's have Cup in front of those Philly, the Sons of Benz fans. Let us crank it up. Let's these two teams just juke it out. The old guard in Seattle and the new kids on the block, Philly. Like I'm all about that matchup. I think it's the sexiest one you could have this year.
So who's coach of the year for you?
Jim Curtin, hands down.
Over Oscar Pereja, hands down.
Yeah. This just goes back, not just this year alone. It goes back to Jim Curtin being underappreciated in Philly. I mean, they called for his head for 4 years straight.
Yeah.
I think it's an incredible achievement what he's been able to do. And then even in as crazy a season as this has been, and that to win the supporter shield, he deserves it, man. If there's a year he's going to win it, he gets it. Oscar can get it next year when Orlando win the MLS Cup.
There you go. One more for you, Stu, and then we'll let you go. Who's the player, the team, the coach, whatever it might be, that really just kind of captured you this year? Is there somebody out there that you just, when you watched him, you said, wow, that's different, that's new, I haven't seen that before, or who took a big step?
Gosh, you put me on the spot here. I've so many different ways I could go on this because of just this season. I'm tempted to say Portland because I think what MLS's back tournament is, and how difficult that was, and not just the commitment from the player side, but from the league side. And I think that is a tournament that will live on in a time capsule in MLS history that we'll talk about for years to come. So I'm gonna go with the Portland Timbers because, you know, Blanco is such a big part of that. He misses out on the rest of the year. I love Gio Savarese as a coach. So I'm going to go with Timbers Nation, especially with Jeremy Bovesy and leading the charge on social injustice and, you know, his role as part of the Black Lives Matter and the Black Players Coalition and all that stuff. So, you know, for them to perform the way they have, for him to have performed the way that he did, I'm going to go with Portland with a narrow runner up being the Philadelphia Union.
Maybe a Bovesy Personality of the Year for our Continental Awards. Those are being voted on, by the way, right now. So head over to @ExtraTime on Twitter. Get your votes in. Big thanks to Stu for joining us, for running home. Charlie, you got any banter to leave it on, or I'll give you your final opportunity here?
Oh, look at him. He's cringing already. No, job well done today.
Oh, man. Yeah. Why do you have to be nice to me?
Just the outfit was a little suspect, but
well, I actually thought it was the lighting. If I was going to be honest, the lighting wasn't the outfit that was your problem.
You know, it's pretty tough. I'm in a VO booth, and they honestly worked on that lighting for 30 minutes, and I was like, I'm pretty sure, guys, I look like I'm being held hostage here. But we can roll. And I'm not kidding. It's a fisheye lens that's this far from my face. And I'm just staring at it this and talking. And it looks like I'm 5 feet away from it. But anyways, it makes me look skinny.
Hey, that's the COVID times for you. We got to talk to Peter Vermees about those. I talked to him earlier today. Let's throw that interview. We'll be back with the mailbag. Time now for another AT&T 5G call to the field. Out to Kansas City we go. Peter Vermees is with us. One of our favorites on this show. Peter, how's it going?
Doing well, thank you. How are you?
I'm doing good, as I think we're all getting through. Let's start with something exciting. We're getting to you before U.S. national team plays today. When you watch this team, when you think about this player pool, I mean, nobody's watched this team, but when you think about the player pool and maybe the phrase five young players, first team regulars in the UEFA Champions League, what do you think about the immediate, medium, and long-term future of what's being built right now?
Well, I think when you look at those guys, you watch them play, you could first talk about it on paper, and then you can just talk about it when they play. They are all special talents. It's probably one of the, I don't know if you want to say the deepest, but it's probably one of the most talented pools that probably has ever been put together that we've ever had. I think for the U.S. national team, the biggest question is going to be is that whether it's, and I'm not questioning those players, I'm questioning the whole entire program from this perspective, is that to play on the national team at the end of the day, you have to do it because you want to represent your country and you want to compete and win with your country. And it's something that's beyond club ball, beyond financial return. It's a different motivation. And I think it's going to be centered around that group of guys coming together and being able to deal with CONCACAF. Because they have to get through that first. You know, it's not an easy it's not easy. It's not easy with the teams you play, the travel, the referees. So I think that's going to be the big question. I think that always is the big question.
It's not easy. I think those are three words to sum up this season. I know how hard this year has been for me and my family. I cannot imagine the stress, the difficulty of playing an MLS season, of competing at the same time and going through what you guys are going through. Take us inside your life. Take us inside Sporting Kansas City, the club. What challenges mentally, physically, personally have tested you the most?
Well, I think the easiest way to say it is that it's the year of inconsistency. And probably the most difficult thing, I think, in sports is that coaches, players, they live for consistency. That's what they're striving for in everything that they do, routine and consistency. And so when you have none of it, it is a challenge every single day. I mean, I know that people sit out there when they hear, you know, coaches, athletes talk about, you know, it's challenging, all those things. They sit there and say, these guys are, you know, playing a game for a living or coaching a game for a living, whatever. It's just that, look, when you go through what you go through, and you're used to doing things a certain way, and then they change, like I said, immensely. It's like flipping it over on its head. That part's been very difficult, but I have to commend not just our players. I would say all the players, because even look at all the guys down in Orlando. Orlando was not an easy situation by any means. And I thought that all the players and the staffs handled it really well. It just wasn't an easy environment. And so I think to say that we're able to get our season up and running and having, you know, played, you know, for most of the teams, 23 games in the season, I think it was a heck of an achievement by the players, the staffs, and the league.
Is there any specifics you can share? I mean, I think about like your day-to-day, your planning. You've always been a meticulous guy. Like, what has to change? What does change? What goes off the table?
Yeah, I think, look, there's quite a few things, but I would say it this way. Everything's okay. And again, I say everything's okay. Everything's kind of getting into this routine when you're testing and everything's fine. The second that you either get a false positive or a positive, it completely changes the day, the week, the mindset until you kind of get through that next 10-day period. Because everybody's thinking, when's the next person going to pop and who's it going to be? And then who were they close contact with? And so that puts a huge strain and stress on everyone. And then also all your protocols, because what happens is that you all of a sudden start to become more stringent again, because we are in a bubble. At the end of the day, we are in a bubble. Like our building is on lockdown. Nobody comes in here unless they're on our cadence of testing. And if they do, they only have one section that they're allowed into. And it's completely separated from anyone who's here on a regular basis. And so all the protocols just become more stringent when somebody pops. And then what it does is it affects the guys mentally, right? Because now all of a sudden you're thinking to yourself, I got to play on Sunday, but today's Thursday and we're going to test, you know, today we're going to test on Saturday before the game. You know, am I going to pop? What's going to happen? And then for me, for many of the games, you know, I would sit by my phone until like 12 o'clock midnight, waiting for the results to come back and seeing if somebody was either positive, and then you're trying to figure out, are they false positive? Are they really positive? And then you got to call the league, and man, the steps that you have to go through were enormous.
Is there anything you can do for that mental side? I mean, do you guys have is there a psychologist you can lean on? Are there programs that you've put in place? Because for me, and I'm just taking my life personally, that is the weight. The physical side is very difficult. My wife had this thing, but it is the everyday just kind of anxiety and stress that I've just never felt before.
Yeah, we actually do have a sports psychologist that we have with the team on a regular basis, in the and she works out of the building that we're at here at you know, in Kansas City. So she's here on a regular basis, so the guys can easily reach out to her. The other thing is that I have to say that the guys have also been extremely disciplined away from here, and that's the hard part. Because you still have to go to the grocery store, you have to do those other things, and they've done a really, really good job of wearing their masks and all those other things. And you know, it's not an easy thing to ask somebody daily to basically drive to the training facility, train, and then go home and don't go anywhere. And by the way, don't ever have anybody come over your house. You know, if your wife wants to have her mom and dad show up, you know, you can't do it. You know, So it's a real demand, and the guys have made a lot of sacrifices, and I commend them for that.
in spite of those demands. I got some stats from the wizard, Kurt Austin, the director of communications over at Sporting. 11th to 1st, that's the biggest single turnaround in conference standings. 21st to 3rd, that's the Shield, the jump from you guys from 2019 to 2020. Was last year a fluke? What is it? What do you attribute last year to when you think back and sort of evaluate now?
I mean, you know, I talked about this endlessly, but at the end of the day, when you have the amount of injuries that we had last year, I mean, at one point, I had 15 guys out in the summer months and for long periods of time. And so it's not an excuse. It's just reality. You can't have a team and try to achieve success and be consistent when you have 15 players out of your team. You know, look, I mean, even now, I mean, we have four players that are out that are all mainstays. Gutierrez all year hasn't played a game. Polito is out at the moment, has basically played in 11 games out of 21 that we played because, you know, two were canceled based on the other teams having COVID. Zeus, you know, got an injury after he played a ball and he's got surgery. So he's out 5 to 6 months now. And then finally Kinda's out and hopefully he'll return. I'm hoping for this first playoff game. So those are all starters. Those are all, you know, really the money guys, if you will. Yeah. You know? Mm-hmm. And so we've dealt with that. I think the difference is that our young guys this year have really taken a big, big step forward. They took a jump that I never expected them to take a jump in as fast as they did. I expected that they would someday reach their potential. I just didn't think it would happen as fast as it is happening at the moment.
I want to get to those young guys, but first I got to dive in on the two big names that you mentioned potentially out here, Polito and Gadi Kinda. Do you think there's a chance Polito can play in this first round for you against San Jose, or is that outside the realm of possibility?
I think it's going to be difficult. I do. I mean, we're trying everything we can. I think it's going to be difficult. He is week to week, but I also don't want to. I'm not going to sacrifice him one way or the other. But I don't do that for any player. I don't care if it's him or one of the young guys. I just wouldn't do that. I just don't think that's the right way to do it. And the other thing is, I have trust in our team, and I have trust in the other guys on the roster. So, I don't know, but hopefully, you know, he continues to progress because he is progressing faster probably than we thought.
Before we get to the matchup and the playoffs themselves, I just want to dive in on Polito because I think if he's healthy, if he's around for the full season, he's probably my center forward in my best 11. I didn't have a center forward in my 11 this year. You see him every day. You get to see him up close after spending all that money. What was worth it about him? What is different about him after a year around him full time?
The soccer player I knew pretty well because of all the scouting, and you know, I've seen him for years, really. It's the other things that he is with the group, the team. He's a team guy. His work ethic, I never expected his work ethic to be as high level that it is. I never expected him to compete the way he does every single day in training and anything that we do. He really cares. He really, really cares. And that has been an incredible example for our team because, you know, that can always backfire too, right? You bring in the guy and you spend a lot of money on him. And next thing you know, he kind of takes a vacation, and that is not the case with him at all. So I think all the guys are pretty impressed with the way he goes about his business every day.
Yeah, Kyrie Shelton, I'm a big fan of Hurtado Island, maybe the best substitute in the league. But I've had some arguments on this show recently, Peter, about Sporting KC as a serious contender for MLS Cup. I absolutely think you are. I'm not going to name names. My co-hosts know who they are, but I've come under some criticism, let's say, for that stance. And maybe that's the fact that you guys have been at this level for so long that it's easy to take that for granted. People who look at Kansas City this year and say, oh, I'm just not sure. Maybe the schedule was a little different. You didn't play the Seattle's, the LAFC's as much. What would you say to people that are wondering right now what this team is and whether you're truly an MLS Cup contender?
I don't think that what I would say first and foremost is that everybody has their opinions and that is what it is. But you don't achieve first place because you're a bad team. I mean, I just don't know how that happens. I've been doing this for a long time. both as a player and as a manager. And I don't know how that happens, first and foremost. I think that, you know, if you in quotes want to say a one-hit wonder, a team that has been really poor over a consistent number of years, and then all of a sudden, you know, out of nowhere, we achieve this. Okay, sure. Doubt it, question it, understand. I don't agree with it, but I, at the end of the day, I know what our guys did. I know how our guys play. I know what our guys do. I know the teams that we play, and I also know who the other teams play. And I know some of their results, and I know some of the results that they played teams that we played. And so I would suggest that maybe some of those people should actually look at the matchups of some of those teams that they played, some of the same teams we did, and maybe look at those results, and maybe you might have a different idea. But at the end, I don't really care. What matters to me is how we think about our team, how our guys think about themselves, and how they go into their games. It's very simple. Just look at our last game of the season. We're playing in a blizzard, playing away from home, and we have to basically win to get first place. First off, it's a rival. I think we all know Salt Lake is probably one of our biggest rivals. I think still very good team. I think always finds a way to get up for our game and vice versa. We always find a way to get up for their game. We have not had a lot of success there. Our guys go into that environment and find a way to win in a very, very difficult situation, but at the same time, also do it away from home. And by the way, we changed the way we play to win that game. I had to throw the game plan out the window because of the conditions of the field. And the guys were able to change on a dime, and I thought actually did it really well. And so those are the things that I have to evaluate as a coach to get my team prepared. And I think that, look, when you look at the teams that have qualified for the playoffs, every team deserves a kudos, right? Because they worked hard. They found a way to qualify, and that's the objective of every team when they start the season. But it's a new season now. And whether you're first or last or whatever, it doesn't really matter. It's now a new season. Our game on the 22nd is a final, and that's how we have to approach it. And you know, San Jose, I don't care what anybody says, I actually think they're a good team. I think they're a tough team. I think they work their butts off on the field. I think that they have a good mentality. They play a mentality with their manager in mind. And so everybody can say what they want, but when you get in the playoffs, it's very difficult.
What do you think about the man marking system and Mateus Almeida and what they do?
I think that there are times when they do and there are times when they don't do that. And I think that's based on situations in the game. I'm not here to comment on his style of play or anything. That's not for me to do. I'm not with them every day. I have a lot of respect for Matias and for Jesse Fiorinelli, their GM, because I know Jesse really well. I've spent time with Matias over the years. He actually, years ago when I was in the league, he came a couple of days to my preseason in Florida. So I know him pretty well. I got a lot of respect for those guys. They work hard. They have a really good idea of what they're trying to achieve. And I always say that the biggest problem in sports, let alone our sport alone, the word time is the word that nobody wants to hear. And it takes time to build something. And they're a good team. And we know that we're in for a very, very difficult battle come the 22nd.
Let's talk about those young players real quick before we get you out of here. Gianluca Busio, where did he make the biggest jump in your mind? What do you think about his position long-term as well? Because I know because of need, because of different things within the team, he's moved around a little bit this year.
One is consistency. One is consistency of play, meaning like from game to game to game, he was able to keep the physical, the technical, tactical, and the psychological up at a high level. There was a point where I couldn't even, and even now, I don't want to consider leaving him off the field because he's played so well. And you want to get your best players on the field. And he's one of those guys. The other is that I've been incredibly impressed by the way that he has been able to play, you know, basically, you know, multiple positions on the field at, again, at a really, really high level and excel. It tells you a lot about his attitude, and it tells a lot about his soccer IQ. Those things have taken a huge, huge leap forward. Best position, he still is very good in the middle of midfield, but he also has, and again, it depends on how you're going to play it, but he also can be a really good winger depending on how you play, you know, the position in the game you're playing or your team.
When you look at his future and you see Brendan Aaronson go and this league start to sell more players, how do you plot out that future? Have there been concrete offers for him? Are there teams sniffing around? How do you handle that situation internally and externally?
There have been concrete offers. And it's really simple. I'm very open with Boos. I've spent time with him talking about this stuff with him because I want him to understand that this is a really important thing, not just to him, but also to us as a club. We want to make sure that wherever he goes from here, that they also have a plan for him. If it ever happens, that they have a plan for him, that it's not just us trying to make a financial gain and then, hey, see you later. We don't really care. That's not the case at all. We really want him to have a plan moving forward if that is to happen. And so he understands that. And he also wants that because he's a very mature kid. He understands that when he goes, it's got to be for the right situation. And what's great about him is he's focused on soccer. He's not focused on, you know, again, money and all those other things. He knows that comes with being a really good player, and he is a good player. And those opportunities will come as well, along with, you know, whatever the future holds.
I know you got to get out of here. I got one more for you. I just submitted my 25 greatest ballot. It was very, very difficult. I felt bad about a lot of snubs. For you, Peter Vermees, who is the greatest player, most influential player in MLS history?
Wow. That's a difficult question. And I think one of the guys you have to put up there, and I'd say David Beckham is one of those guys. And I only say that because the notoriety that he brought to our league, it changed the course of the way our league moved forward with DPs and bringing in, he kind of legitimized it, right? He came and said, hey, I'm going to go play in that league and I'm going to make it a long-term effort. And by the way, now he's an owner in the league and it shows that he believes in the league. So I think that his impact in all of that, I'd have to say that that's probably for me the largest. One of the best players that I think has been in this league, and again it's my personal opinion, is I think Jaime Moreno was an incredible player just because of what he can do. I look at Pulido a little bit like him. Jaime could score goals, he could give the final pass. If he needed to be a playmaker that day, he could. If he needed to be a winger, he could. If he needed to play underneath and in the midfield, he could do that. If he needed to play the target, like he could do whatever the game needed to win. And there's not a lot of players that could do that. But at the same time, did it week in, week out. Really, really good player.
Looking forward to seeing this list. Thank you so much for your thoughts, Peter. Back to work, I'm sure. San Jose coming up here in the playoffs. We'll see you then, all right?
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Big thanks to Peter Vermees for joining us today. I know the work is happening as they prepare for the first match of the Audi MLS Cup playoffs against the San Jose Earthquakes. We'll get to some mail here in a second around MLS, but I think we have some U.S. reactions to run through. Dave, take it away.
Yeah, I'm just going to throw a few tweets at you that we had responding to our request from the fans about their thoughts. Matt Killeen here says, with Pulisic and a striker, you can see how this is all going to work out going forward. Musa, Adams, McKenney, world-class physicality in midfield, Brooks passing, and Desk clever linking. We're only a few pieces away right now. He says striker, left back, and right wing. Will Harding says, watching Desk, Adams, and McKenney against a B-level Wales side already has me irrationally believing we can win a World Cup with this generation of talent.
Yeah, look, I think the shot that? Back behind Charlie there, the squealing of the shot back, basically just, it kind of, you know, it signifies our excitement here. It's just a, like one long squeal to be back doing this again. So that's beautiful. I do think that a striker, just in making runs to provide space, is going to be, to push a back line backwards and give Reyna more room to work, to give McKinney more room to run into, or Musa, or whoever it is, or if it was Legette next to McKinney, I mean, that's going to help so much. I agree with Stu. Like, I didn't feel great about this, but he's right. When you look at the bench, it's not like you have guys that are just like banging down the door and you're saying, I have to get that guy in the field with the full national team. Those are not yet those guys, despite us all getting excited about them or watching their clip reels or, you know, whatever it might be. Shout out to the Scuff podcast. There's still some time and there's still some work to do to integrate what I think are sort of two squads right now just because of COVID. I would ask you guys this, and I've been thinking about it and was thinking about it throughout that game. Who in MLS can push into this team, should push into this team, would have an opportunity to start in this team right now? You have two names, Charlie. Give them to me.
Mark McKenzie, Jordan Morris.
Yeah.
Yeah. Morris, yeah. Look.
Those are the two obvious ones, both positionally. Like, they both fit. Although McKenzie's a left-sided center back, as is Brooks.
But he's right-footed, though.
Okay. So then he has to play there, which is fine. Mm-hmm. And he's shown his ability to play two-footed, so I don't think it's a big issue. And then Jordan Morris, the other one, where I would say, when we were talking with Stu about that depth chart, I would feel more comfortable having Jordan Morris as a false nine, which he's not, because he's played the position before in his career, 100%. Than a Legette. So he's even in that pool, on top of the fact that, in my mind, he's the starting right midfielder for this team. So I would agree with Charlie. I don't think there's anyone else that's banging the door down. I will say this. I follow the youth ranks of U.S. soccer and MLS as much as anyone. And I believe in, you know, the academy system and the way it's working and all these young players. We will always have, maybe not Wando's, because Wando was a weird, unique thing, but like a Jeff Cameron, who we didn't know. And he went to college and took a few years in MLS and then was a national team player. We will always have those players, late developers. Matt Beisler and Graham Zusi were both those guys. We're always going to have guys like that. So it's not like they have to be 19 and playing with the national team or it's over. There will be players who develop later in their careers and can do a job for the national team, whether you want them to be the starter at the time or not.
Is Daryl DK one of those guys for you?
Probably, just because he was overlooked in the national team pool. And yeah, he's only 19, right? So he's got plenty of time to still play at that level. But I think Obobese goes in there as well if he's able to develop. And maybe it clicks for him. And you were talking to us about when it clicked for you at 25 or 26. Maybe there's guys still, and there are, who go to college or don't, and just go to Europe by themselves and figure it out. And it takes a little while. And then they're able to get into the national
team. I would have loved to see DK in this team. Like, dropping into combine and then pushing hard up the field to provide that space that McKinney bursts into is what I would have loved to see. That. We're not going to get that. We don't know when we're going to get that. What else we got from
I would have loved to see Ayo Akinola.
I know. Hey, look, put that full court press on. I agree, man. I agree. Yeah. Let's do both. Why not both?
Yep.
Give me both.
Yeah. Give me both.
Hey,
all I'm saying is, there are a number of players who can play that position. And sure, it's one camp, it's one game. We haven't seen the national team in a while. But I wouldn't get hung up on that nine position yet. Like, there's no need to say, sound the alarms. Like, Josie still working back. And if I'm Josie and I'm watching this group of players, that's going to give you a little spark. Yeah. That's going to give you a major spark to say, hey, I could be the leader of this team, on the field, being a guy that's going to be, don't have to worry about service, don't have to worry about creativity, because all of these players are playing at top clubs and all have a huge future in front of them. That would motivate me to stay healthy, to be engaged, to do all of the above when it comes to playing for the national team. So I would not rule out Josie Altidore having a big impact in the future.
And putting Christian Pulisic, which is like the elephant in the room here. Mm-hmm. My God. We got excited about this. Imagine that scenario. TBD on that.
Let me close you out with Kevin Chan, who's on your page. He says, I don't care that it's nil-nil. When else did we see this much technical competency and sauce being splashed out from a USMNT? The US was fun to watch. I was entertained. I haven't said that about a friendly in years. I couldn't care less about the score.
I mean, Serginho Dest is like snaking people at midfield.
2010 is the last time we saw that song.
Yeah, I mean, it's been many, 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 many years. I still remember all the feelings of 2010 and 2009, by the way, too. I remember Confederations Cup, sitting in my room. I taped the game and then my roommates ruined it for me. But watching you guys pull those things off and then almost beat Brazil. I mean, those are the moments that get you hooked on this stuff. And I just hope we have a bunch more of those moments to come. What do you got from MLS, Dave? Remember, 401-206-0 MLS, extra time at MLSsoccer.com.
So Johnny Button sent us this on Twitter, and he says, this is from a Boca Juniors in English podcast, says that the LA Galaxy want to retain Christian Pavone. They would have to submit a bid of at least $10 million US dollars. Otherwise, Pavone must return within the first few days of January 2021 to Boca Juniors. Would you do it? Is that money well spent? Because we talked about a number even higher than that when we had talked about Pavone a few weeks ago. $10 million for a designated player in MLS? That's reasonable.
Yeah, it doesn't seem as crazy as it once did. If it was like, what was it, like 15? It was 20 before? Was that
something
what it was?
Like that,
and at 18. 20, I said, oh, no way. Not with the state of their club right now. But at 10, and I don't think you're buying him for sell-on at that point. I think you're buying him to be like the foundation of your team, the best player on your team for the next 4 or 5 years as you essentially rebuild everything, because that's what they're saying that they got to do. For 10, I would be really tempted. I think I might do it. I put him in my best 11. I think on ability, he's right there. If anybody was going to help get the best out of Chicharito, it's going to be a player like him that can just take things over on his own and beat players on his own. So I think for 10, I would do it, but it's not my money. So it's really easy for me to be like, 10 mil for Pavone? Yes, give me that every single day of the week.
But here's the other thing. We've talked about this a little bit, and it happened a while back, weirdly, with Toronto and Jermaine Defoe, is when you enter the world market at that value level, if it didn't work out, you could still sell Pavone for a number probably close to that to a club. This is a guy who's starting a World Cup for Argentina. Let's say in a year and a half it didn't work. He's still 26. Like, that's not flushing money down the drain. And I think it's worked out for, let's say, New England with Gustavo Bow. But you weren't really going to sell that on later. You could sell Pavone to Liga MX. You could sell him to Europe, to Portugal, to Italy.
Another aspect of that is, yeah, you plan to have him with the foundation of your club and for the future. But if he does perform like at a crazy level and a team comes in for 15, 20, 25 million, you say, thank you. Here you go. Enjoy that European move. And then you recoup the funds and you reinvest. But I think for $10 million, and you've seen some of the players, purchased across the league, that's for a player of Christian Pavone's stature, you make that worth it.
100%
settled. The extra time pot. We will now purchase Christian Pavone.
Did us the close up.
For Chris Klein, extra time,
we've made the decision. The money is already wired. You don't have to even do anything. It is going straight to Boca Juniors. Don't even worry about it. The other
Venmo,
nice thing about
right?
This,
they yeah, take exactly. Venmo?
I think that's below the Venmo limits. We certainly can do that.
We can hit this. We got this.
Black card, whatever it takes.
Let me close you out here with the legend Bill Carroll from Section 132, basically saying, is 2020 not the most Metro year of all time? The Red Bulls are clearly going to win MLS Cup. 2020 is the biggest crap show ever, so why not have Red Bull end the year with the Cup? It would be so 2020 and even more so Metro for us to win it with no fans in the stadium, and that's probably a pretty apt. Yes, what you would.
Here's the thing, Red Bulls fans. Like, if you did that, you would just be copying the 24 others that have won MLS Cup. It's not like you'd be doing something original, so don't worry about it. Like, I cannot get over the amount of messages that I got this week from the Red Bulls faithful about this friggin' supporter shield thing where they were saying, do you not remember that we had ours two years ago? And I was like, I was on the field, I interviewed all of the players. I hyped that up. It was a big deal. They cannot give the union their moment in the sun. They just can't do it. They can't stand it. It sits in their bellies and it just rips them apart.
There it is.
It's not about you, Red Bulls. It's not about you. But if you win it, it'll be awesome. That'd be super cool and definitely apt for 2020. All right. That's it from us. Big thanks to Stu Holden for dropping by. Finally got to his PR people. Took long enough. Hope you're still listening, Stu. And then big thanks to Peter Vermees for stopping by. We will preview the Audi MLS Cup playoffs next week leading into the play-in games and the first round, round one. I believe that's the vernacular. And we are also efforting to have Greg Berhalter on this show. So look out for that one. And enjoy your weekend, everybody. We'll see you on Monday.
Thursday. We're having them on a Thursday.
Exactly. Just for you, Charlie. Adios. We'll be right back.